Mike, I was wondering if you could explain what the new group Fire This Time is, this new group that started to organize in Vancouver.
Sure. Well, the name of the group is the Fire This Time Movement for Social Justice, and we came together in early January of this year. Basically, the focus of the group is trying to build a mass-based movement of poor and working people, specifically within British Columbia. But there's been a right-wing government in power now for almost 2 years. They've been making huge cuts to social programs and also cuts to labor regulations, etc. They have a huge agenda of privatization, especially with of hospitals and BC Hydro. So our focus being in BC is building a mass-based movement against that. Of course, we do put our work in an internationalist framework. We recognize that big change is not going to happen in BC without it happening elsewhere in the world. Our problems are not specific to British Columbia. This agenda is happening all over Canada and, of course, all over the world. So we do put it in that framework that, although we are specifically fighting this within British Columbia, it's part of the broader fight against global capitalism.
In January, there was a demonstration organized in front of the Vancouver airport because of the fact there was a woman from Iran and her son that had received deportation orders. I was wondering, because some of the members of Fire This Time were at this demonstration, I was wondering if you could tell us like when this happened and what happened exactly during the demonstration.
Okay. Yes. Well, basically, it was at the Vancouver International Airport on Tuesday, January the 21st. Basically, what happened was there was two people from Iran, Kobra Necki, and her son Hassan Ismat. They were scheduled to be deported that day. They'd gone into the immigration office on the Friday previous to that day for what was supposed to be a regular appointment. At that appointment, they were handcuffed and detained for deportation. So a few different groups who'd been involved with deporting Kobra and Hassan, they organized a very last minute sort of picket at the airport. And what happened, which was definitely not expected by anybody, was Kobra and Hassan. They were removed from the airplane. I don't know exactly what happened on the airplane, but Hassan is epileptic, and from what it sounds like, he had a seizure. And they were basically generally the pilots who were taking deported people will not fly the plane if there's any sort of commotion happening. So they were removed from the plane. And it was while they were being moved back to the detention cell that that the people who were at the demonstration who knew Kobra recognized her. And I mean, I personally wasn't there, but there was a commotion of people who were around the around Kobra and the guard. And Kobra did end up breaking free from the hold of the guard and fled with a few other people from the airport.
And then what happened afterwards after she freed herself?
Well, that was basically that was true. That was in the afternoon that this happened, late morning, early afternoon. She fled, and then later on in the evening was put in contact with her lawyer. And her options at the time were to either seek sanctuary in a church or to turn herself in. Her main concern, of course, was her son. Her son is 19 years old, and her main concern is that he was still there, and she didn't want to be separated from her son. And the option of sanctuary was a more of a short-term kind of thing. For her to seek sanctuary would mean, living within a church, not being able to leave, not being able to work, not being able to see people, etc. Her options were quite limited. She did end up turning herself in the next morning to the police on the advice of her lawyer.
Was she with her lawyer at the time?
Yes, as far as I understand, she was with the lawyer, and as well, of course, the interpreter that the lawyer had for her.
And so what happened next?
Well, then there was a hearing was scheduled that day, a detention hearing, which never ended up happening. And then the next day, the hearing was scheduled again for the Thursday at 2:30. But we then found out we'd gone to the immigration office to find out that she'd actually already been deported. I believe she was deported around 1 o'clock on Thursday.
So she was deported without ever having a hearing.
Well, the hearing had already happened. The thing is these, it's a weird judicial thing. Because these were, the hearings were, they were detention hearings, which basically determines whether or not Coburn Hassan would still be held in detention until the deportation occurred. You know, essentially, if a person is considered a flight risk, then they're held in detention until the deportation comes up. So considering that they were already in detention and what had happened with Cobra, it was clear that any hearings would have ruled that, of course, that they would still want to hold her in detention.
Now, it has come to my knowledge that Cobra had already been in Canada for a total of 5 years.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, she had never received any... She was a non-status immigrant, is that so?
Yes. She'd had a refugee status. And according to one of the associations that got involved in her case, unfortunately, when it was too late, her and her son actually had a pretty good case for moving on to becoming landed immigrants. Unfortunately, they didn't end up in the hands of an immigration lawyer, a refugee lawyer. They ended up in the hands of what are known as immigration consultants. Now, generally, as I understand it, immigration consultants, they're not lawyers. They're not trained to actually provide help. And basically they will pose to people as lawyers that are able to help them with their cases. They charge ridiculous amounts of money to help people, although, of course, they do not have the skills or even the intent necessarily to help people with their cases. It's a way of preying on people who've come from other countries and are not familiar with the way the process works. And in a lot of cases, it is actually works to the advantage of a consultant to have their clients detained because it puts the person in a more desperate situation. The consultant could say, well, I can get you out of here, but it's going to cost you even more money. So the particular consultant that they had gone to has a really shady history of doing this kind of work, and has even been sued by other organizations for misconduct and negligence, you know, which leads in people being deported.
What is your group, Fire This Time, doing, and maybe also other groups that work with immigrants, doing to warn people who come to Canada in regards to these consultants?
Well, for us, this is, this issue of the consultants, it's a very new thing to us as being a new group. as far as specifically with the consultants, like I said, some of the other different advocacy organizations, you know, try and make sure that people are aware that these consultants are out there and they will prey on immigrants and refugees and make sure that people are put in contact with legitimate groups that actually are able to help immigrants and refugees.
What is the group Fire This Time hoping to do in the future in regards to immigrants' issues?
Well, we're starting off with two campaigns as a group. One is focused on the low-wage workers, more specifically the $6 training wage, which was brought in by the Liberal government. Well, it was one of the earlier policy changes that the provincial government brought in. What it basically is a wage for so-called inexperienced workers that is $2 below the minimum wage. Now, legally, the way it works, if you've never worked before the legislation came in, or if you haven't worked up to 500 hours of work, then you can make this training wage. But it's the way that the laws are written is really vague on experience and whatnot. So it's really easy. It's really easy for employers to take advantage of the way the law exists and take advantage of people and tell people that, well, you know, you don't have work experience in BC or you don't have work experience in this country, so I'm able to pay you the $6 training wage. The other problem with it is that there's been a lot of changes to the Employment Standards Act in British Columbia that make it much more difficult for people to actually file claims and successfully win claims against their employers. So there's very little, if a person is getting illegally paid the training wage, there's little recourse that they have. And this is just generally part of the, it's another way that businesses are able to exploit workers from other countries by misapplying rules or by breaking the rules, paying people less than they legally deserve. But because they've put immigrants and refugees in a situation where they fear potential deportation, if they speak out. They're forced to accept the situation that the employer puts them in. But in regards to immigration, our other campaign is legal defense. Originally, our legal defense work came out of an incident that happened now being called the Britannia Police Riot. There was a demonstration there that that involved a lot of police violence, and a number of people were arrested and are facing charges. And we have a legal defense campaign around that. Now, the way that that ties in to immigration refugee work is that essentially the campaign is about defending democratic rights. We believe that in fighting for rights, for democratic rights for working people, there's a potential to expand those rights. And right now, the most important rights that are under attack right now are immigrant and refugee rights. So we put it in the context of democratic rights, and these are rights that are not just important for immigrants and refugees to fight for. That's important for all poor and working people to defend these rights, to move our interests forward as a whole.
Well, thank you very much, Mike.